This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, also Julian Ng and Kusu Chuang. It's now 7:35, Monday, the 19th of September. In the main business headlines, we've got China's holdings of US treasuries, the lowest in 3 years. Also, expats in Malaysia get the lowest pay package in Asia Pacific. But first, an update on Indonesia's tax amnesty program. So far, since the tax amnesty was announced in June, Indonesians have declared almost $9 billion of assets held in Singapore. However, the Indonesian Finance Ministry thinks that this is only a small proportion of the figure that has been brought back home, because out of the $9 billion, only about 12% has been repatriated.
Yeah, the latest number is actually about $1.8 billion repatriation so far out of the $9 billion US dollars that the Indonesian government is targeting. And just from a cash flow viewpoint, I mean, if you are one of those people with a lot of money in a bank in Singapore, for every 10 million US dollars that you repatriate back to Indonesia, you've got to pay about 400,000 US dollars in taxes, because the tax rate for the amnesty is 4%, right? 400,000. I mean, there is the carrot in it, in the sense that you are going to be protected from paying full taxes in Indonesia. But where is the stick? I mean, if I don't want to pay that negative cash flow, I would just leave it in Singapore.
So I don't understand. So basically, the Indonesian government has allowed financial crime offenders, amnesty from putting their money, the funny money maybe, in Singapore. Is that right?
Is that they're saying that there's an amnesty program, and we want you, and I'm speaking from an Indonesian government perspective, we want you to bring your money back that you've stashed overseas. And now the more money
This could be honest money, or could be,
whatever money.
Whatever money, yeah. Because the Indonesian government needs
money.
A lot of that money
because
for infrastructure.
Huge budget deficit, right?
So it's better to get back illegal money better than not at all.
Well, I think the stick that you were referring to, Jules, is the fact that for those who have declared assets that they chose to leave. Oh, so okay, for the money that you bring back, you only have to pay 2% tax rate on that those assets. If you declare but you leave it overseas, it's 4%. But the longer you leave it overseas, it will increase, and come March next year, it will increase up to 10%. So that is the disincentive to leave your money overseas.
But why? Why even declare it?
Exactly. But what is the disincentive? Yeah. What is the incentive to declare it at all?
So I think the reason is because there is a big degree of the mixing of politics and business in Indonesia. I think this harks back to the days of Suharto, right? When he appointed all his cronies to take care of all business in Malaysia. For example, they roped in James Riady of the Lippo Group. And he's the richest man in Singapore. He's declared, he's made a public declaration that he would pay the taxes, his declared degree of assets that he has overseas. The other guy, Tahe, who's the founder of PT Bank Mayapada, he's also just got one name in his name. He's just known as Tahe, right?
Right. That's how big he is.
It's like Cher.
Right. Yeah. You don't just get one name whenever you like it. You've got to have some kind of clout.
Yeah.
Like, King William or something. That's just one name, right? he's also declared that he would pay the taxes. So I guess there is a lot of political pressure for businessmen to support this policy.
But okay, so the finance minister of Indonesia is Sri Mulyani Indrawati, right? She has, of course, a fantastic track record internationally, coming back to Indonesia to implement Jokowi's economic transformation. However, I wonder whether this plan is far too ambitious. Now, when they announced it in June, you got a lot of traction, right? But I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and they noted that that the Ministry of Finance in Indonesia, their website, had this tracker, like a little progress bar, to see how many people had brought back their money against the target that they had. And while it was quite fast moving in the beginning, in the early stages, now they've decided to remove that entire tracker altogether. So it's no longer on the website.
So it's no longer a gush, it's just a trickle. But then you've got to ask yourself, who's got the bigger carrot? Because when you look at the Singapore wealth management business, it's in totality, there's $470 billion AUM. And this, I think Indonesian money is around about $200 billion of that. So
it's half.
it's just crazy. Almost half, yeah. So it would be in Singapore's best interest to incentivize the Indonesian wealthy to keep their money
which
there.
Which is why the Indonesian authorities are asking Singapore not to spoil the market, right? Because as we all know, Singapore has been cracking down on banking practices recently because of the whole 1MDB debacle. And it's quite easy to flag any of these money transfers as something that violates one of the many, you know, anti-money laundering laws that they have.
Yeah.
But, you know, the property sector is really benefiting from all of this, the rich Indonesians. So apparently, in the first half of the year, Indonesians bought 190 properties of all values in Singapore, 23% higher than the same period last year. In fact, Indonesians beat all foreign buyers of high-end units in Singapore for 2016. So they're parking their money somewhere, and what better place to park than a nice luxury condo on Orchard Street?
It is one of the easiest and most, and you know, potentially the most kosher ways to squirrel your money abroad.
It's gone quite cheap as well, because the Singapore property market has come down over the last year, so it works out well for a lot of these Indonesians.
Well, if your name is Eduardo Saverin, but Tahir.
Just a one name, Tahir. Okay, moving on to China's holdings of U.S. treasuries in July fell by $22 billion compared to the month of June. It is now at the lowest level in more than 3 years.
Well, they had to sell a lot of the U.S. dollar treasury to defend the yuan, which has been under attack. And if you look at Chinese foreign exchange reserves, it has dropped by about $1 trillion since the high. Imagine that $1 trillion has China's foreign exchange reserves fallen to about 3.2 trillion from the high of about 4 trillion in 2014.
Well, they were busy defending the yuan in the last few months, weren't they? Because remember, they spent something like $600 billion or something to defend the currency from the outflows that was happening in China. So no surprise, they're probably selling US treasuries.
It's not just China, though. I mean, Saudi Arabia also grappling with the falling oil prices. They've been selling treasuries for 6 straight months now. Their holdings are just under $100 billion at the moment. Only Japan, I think, their portfolio has increased, and they are second largest holders after China.
Yeah, and also Ireland is the third largest.
Ireland?
Surprise or not surprising, because Ireland is also one of those low tax havens in the European Union, so a lot of money is probably parked there.
It's amazing, right? Yeah.
7:43 right now. New York's Attorney General is investigating why ExxonMobil hasn't written down the value of its assets. Now, it's coming on 2 years since oil prices have plunged. And if you look at other oil companies, they've written down a combined $200 billion of their holdings. ExxonMobil, on the other hand, they've kept the value of their oil assets steady.
"We don't do write-downs," is the quote from Rex Tillerson, chairman and CEO of...
"We don't do write-downs?"
"We don't do write-downs," because what they're saying is that in the first place, they price a lot of these projects very conservatively. So there is no need to write up or write down. I'm not sure if this is a proper accounting practice, because on one hand, accountants frown at your action of overvaluing assets, right? But on the other hand, is undervaluation the other extreme?
Yeah, so when does a company need to write down the value of its asset? I mean, is there a standard practice that you have to look at it every few months, or every time the oil price... So specifically for energy companies, I mean, do you have to look at it every time oil, you know, passes a certain threshold? Because to not write down or not to revise it feels a little irresponsible to the shareholders.
Right? Well, in the first place, I mean, if your asset is, let's say, worth $10 billion, at that point in time, but you have only accounted, you're putting it in your books at about $5 billion, and then oil prices half as it has since 2014, right? You don't really have to write it down because you put a lower value in your books in the first place.
Right, okay. But do you think that the reason for not writing down is also optimism for the future? So even though oil prices are low, they're not writing it down because they think oil prices could rebound in the future. And so why write it down now when there could be a recovery in the offing?
Well, I don't know who can make that prediction. Oil prices
all
rebounding.
Over the place, doesn't it?
Yeah. Sorry?
it's been jumping all over the place.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, but that's the reason that they've given, because they did not put the real value of those assets up in the first place. And the reason is that they want all their project managers to survive at a very low oil price level. And I still don't know whether if this is a proper accounting practice.
Well, the New York Attorney General is definitely keeping a close eye on this oil giant. But it's 7:45 now, and we'll shift our focus to the local business scene after this on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.